everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Behind the Case, an ACG Case Report Journal podcast. Each month, we highlight a case published in the journal to provide valuable teaching points for our listeners. Today, we are discussing a fascinating case titled Pancreatic Cyst Fluid Next Generation Sequencing as the First Diagnostic Clue to Von Hippel-Lindau Syndrome. I'm Asta Barwad, a second-year fellow at UT Health Houston and an associate editor for ACG Case Report Journal. I'm extremely honored to be joined by the author of the report, Dr. Jonathan Gial, an assistant professor at University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. His interest lies in improvement of non-invasive diagnostic modalities of gastrointestinal diseases and cancers. We are also joined by a fantastic guest expert, Dr. Nirav Thasani. He's a professor and chief of gastroenterology division at UT Health Houston, and his interest focuses on pancreatic biliary disease and pancreatic cancer diagnosis and endoscopic management. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here. To start us off, Dr. Zia, can you walk us through the patient's initial presentation and what ultimately led to the discovery of the pancreatic cyst?
Yeah, she had a very interesting presentation. She was a 44-year-old woman. She was actually out of the country in Germany when she developed a really intense headache and was found to have a subarachnoid hemorrhage. She was stabilized there, and then they flew her back to Michigan, where she lives normally. And most of her care initially here in Michigan was with neurosurgery. While she was admitted, they did get a CTM in pelvis because they found that the bleed was actually due to a cervical hemangioblastoma. So if someone has a suspicion of this is something, there might be something underlying, but mainly due to her age and these clinical findings. But on her discharge, I think that the focus of the neuro rehab, the brain bleed was the top priority. They sent a referral to see us in GI, and she was actually seeing the GI fellows clinic here and was mainly referred to me here for US because of the number and size of the pancreas cyst she had. They didn't really make a referral at the time for anything else more than that.
So when you guys got to know about the pancreatic cyst, when they were discovered, was there any suspicion for a hereditary syndrome like Von Hippel-Lindau syndrome to begin with, or did you guys find it out later?
Not at the time, because at the time we looked at the things, she had the brain bleed, and then they did a CT while in the hospital, and they said maybe some suspicion, but nothing. I think everyone was so focused on the brain bleed still. So we looked at her MRI. It was just innumerable amount of cysts, and there was one that was a dominant one to me because it was almost 5 centimeters in size. And this was all almost 6 months since she was in the hospital admitted that she got to the US appointment. And on US, she had innumerable cysts, nothing microcystic or a solid, anything solid that's concerning for a pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor, which things such as a serous cyst adenoma or a neuroendocrine tumor more classic for von Hippel-Lindau disease. So initially no, and I mainly biopsied because the size of the cyst, and it's kind of unclear what was going on. So I just biopsied the largest one that was 4.8 centimeters, and I performed all the normal tests, CA, amylase, glucose, cytology, but I also added the pancreas seq just because her story was a little more interesting and I thought there was probably something else going on for her. But at the time she hadn't seen medical genetics and we kind of just want to see what was going on.
That's very fascinating that you decided to go for the molecular analysis as well. So what did the conventional cyst fluid test show?
For her, cytology was benign, the CEA was low, glucose was normal, and the amylase was low as well. So overall, just from fluid analysis itself, even though the cyst itself did not have the microcystic appearance on EOS that you would expect for a serous cyst adenoma, that's the fluid kind of suggested that. And that retrospectively kind of made me happy that I did the pancreas seq, because at that point, if that's all it was, I felt like someone probably may have requested another biopsy or some form of additional testing before they would have sent them to genetics.
So the key turning point was the next generation sequencing result. Can you explain to our listeners what mutation was identified and why that finding was so important for the case?
Yeah, so for this, usually for the sequencing results, they do a panel, essentially, of all the mutations. They're associated with, risk factors for mucinous cysts and other types of pancreas cysts. And for our sequencing results, there was a codon in the von Hippel-Lindau protein, and gene for 161, which is, and it had a nonsense mutation, meaning that it results in a truncated protein. For things that are associated with von Hippel-Lindau disease, it's usually three codons, 167, 161, 98 are the three most common ones. If our result didn't have one of these more common hits that are known to be associated with the syndrome, I probably would not have even looked more into it, to be honest. But this one I looked up and she had all these, weird things like the brain bleed, now these pancreas cysts, and then I think she also had a renal lesion. This was something that I thought maybe this is something we need to look more into. So we sent her to genetics mainly for that reason, because she actually had a known codon mutation that's associated with von Hippel-Lindau. And, you know, it resulted in a protein truncating mutation. So it resulted in a non-functional protein as well. So that's why we sent her to genetics for further evaluation. And then her, you know, eventual germline testing showed the same exact VHL mutation also in her germline testing, which kind of, to me, is interesting because it's exactly what was in the cyst and the germline was exactly the same mutation.
So you believe that helped in the patient getting an earlier genetic counseling compared to what it would have happened with a delay later on?
I think so, because I think eventually she probably would have made there anyways, because eventually I think what would have happened is she would have made it to the nephrology part of her appointments, where there was also a left kidney lesion that they were interested in, and that probably would eventually wouldn't either have gotten resected or biopsied, and that probably would have also given more clues. But I think we just got there before the nephrologists.
That makes sense. Well, thank you for sharing the patient's journey. This is where the case becomes particularly interesting, because it highlights the broader role of molecular diagnostic in pancreatic cyst evaluation. And I would like to bring our guest expert, Dr. Thosani, into the discussion over here. Dr. Thosani, from a broader clinical perspective, how common is pancreatic involvement in patients with von Hippel-Lindau disease?
Yeah, thank you for having me here. As far as this particular question, almost 60 to 70% of patients with von Hippel-Lindau syndrome will have a form of pancreatic involvement, but this could be very variable presentation. It can range with a simple cyst. Frequently, you can see multiple small cysts with a cluster similar to in this case. Sometimes you see a classic serous cyst adenoma, which is a combination of microcystic lesion with some macrocyst with a central scar. Or sometimes you even see pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor, which are usually non-functional. So presentation in pancreas could be very variable, but it's almost 70% of time. So you are going to frequently see this type of lesion in the pancreas.
So in this particular case, the cyst looked relatively benign on imaging. Is it common for VHL-related pancreatic lesions to mimic other cyst types?
Yes, it's fairly common. Usually the cyst, most common features that I have frequently noticed is very similar to this presentation, that these patients, young patients, have innumerable cysts throughout the pancreas. Many of them are small, simple, benign appearing cysts. Some could be even a larger size, similar to in this case. That's usually commonly what you would encounter.
So how do you currently view the role of next generation sequencing of pancreatic cyst fluid in clinical practice?
I think it's very, very important. Whenever we are evaluating pancreatic cystic lesion, biggest question is, are we dealing with mucinous cyst or non-mucinous cyst? Current diagnostic testing, as it was done here, cytology, CEA, amylase, glucose, they are more or less standard of care. But combining all, you still have diagnostic accuracy within range of 75 to 80%. When you add next generation sequencing on top of it, most commonly checked genes are KRAS and GNAS, which will at least help you identify if you're dealing with a mucinous cystic neoplasm, and that does increase your diagnostic accuracy close to 85 to 90%.
Do you think cases like this suggest that molecular testing may also help identify hereditary cancer syndrome and not just classify cyst?
Oh, definitely. If you look at pancreas sequencing, which was done here, that lab can currently test over 85 different genes. Some of them are commonly used in clinical practice, but not all of them. But I think as this test getting more and more sophisticated and our ability to detect various genetic mutation is increasing, I think this will be the way of future. And I think most, if you are going to do workup of pancreatic cyst and going to do fine needle aspiration of the cyst, there is no reason not to check for it, because it does definitely helps you not only diagnosis, but also in a prognosis, that how you are going to move forward with that patient and what you are going to do with that patient.
That's good to know. Thank you for sharing that. Dr. Shreya, I have a question. In large academic centers, we do get this benefit of having the next generation sequencing, but what do you think the role of this would be for our basic community practice, for those who practice in the community?
So this actually is, the service is offered by, I think the one I used, at least the PancreaSeq, is offered by University of Pittsburgh. So anyone can submit these samples. As long as you get one of their sample submission forms and the kits, they will happily mail those to you, as long as you make an account with them. So I think when for anyone even in the community and they say they're practicing and they have a, these cysts that are questionable or they're not sure about, they're happy to do testing for you. All you have to do is I think 0.2 cc's of a fluid sample is what you need. And you put it in their kit and then have your lab mail it to them and you fill out the form they need. Most insurances, I think, I haven't had any issues for insurance, and most major insurances do cover this. I think now Medicaid has now said they're not going to cover this anymore, but most people work with you on these type of things. If you say, hey, this is really important, you can probably get some type of, you know, inclusion for patients if it's important for their workup.
That's good to know. So somebody, even in community GI practice, yeah, would be able to get that for their patients.
Yeah, if you have a patient that you need, you can contact University of Pittsburgh and say, we would like to send a sample for you for this. And I'm sure you know, do the needed paperwork. They will take the sample, help you get the results.
Dr. Tosani, coming to you, for clinicians evaluating pancreatic cyst, what clinical clues should raise suspicion for an underlying hereditary syndrome?
Yeah, I mean, any unusual presentation should raise the suspicion. Usually pancreatic cystic lesions, you do not encounter more of the suspicious one at a very early age. So if in a young patient you are seeing a pancreatic cystic lesion, that is one of the suspicious lesions. If they have other systemic diseases, whether they have hemangiomas on the skin or neurofibromatosis, those could be another clue that you maybe need to start worrying about. Patient here also having a young age with a brain bleed, another good clue. So if you start to see some of this pattern or features, then you need to worry about. Other thing also is that if they have multiple cystic lesions in other organs, so many times you start to see lesions in the liver. It's actually fairly frequently that you may see pancreatic cystic lesion and also cyst in the liver. But if you now start to see other lesion in kidney or other areas, then those are some good clues that that may be something more than just a pancreatic cystic lesion.
Good points. What is the single most important takeaway, Dr. Jia, from this case for a gastroenterologist?
The most important thing, I think, is the need to consider using these newer next generation sequencing-based tests to restratify patients with pancreas cysts, like what Dr. Tosani said, especially if you're seeing them for a second opinion or you need additional information to make a definitive plan versus, you know, for someone, do you want to push the surgeons to say, hey, this is someone that I think really needs surgery or not? These molecular profiles, they usually can give you like, hey, this is a high-risk profile for a cyst, even though endoscopic ultrasound, they look exactly the same as one that's low risk. Some of these genetic markers are proven to be associated with high risk for transformation of pancreas cancer. They'll give you at least a risk rod. They'll say high risk on there. And I think if you have that information for some patients, that could be a big change in what you would do for them long-term, you know, surveillance versus you push them to do surgery or some of the other modalities of treatments that are now available. And I think a really interesting update for this patient also is they're now plugged in with genetics. And in 1 year follow-up, they got another MRI actually a couple of weeks ago. And the fellow that saw them in clinic sent me a message saying, can you look at the MRI? And they had some very concerning features. A couple of the cysts developed something called mironodules, so solid components within the cysts, thickening of the septations, which are these, you know, are very concerning features in a cyst for any, you know, pancreas physician. And they asked me, what do you think we should do next step? I told them I think we should repeat another ultrasound and biopsy those areas. That sounds very concerning to me. But, you know, to my surprise, you know, these oncologists who are experts in VHL here in Michigan actually had tumor board on this and say, well, these are just changes associated with VHL. You don't need to do anything, which I was very surprised by. I don't know if Dr. Tosani, you have any comments on this. If you saw a patient with these findings a year later, where they compare the two, you know, MRIs within, you know, in a year and they have these transformations, wouldn't you be worried that, hey, we need to maybe biopsy these solid components to see what's going on?
Yeah, great question, because this does happen. But if we have confirmatory diagnosis of VHL, usually this cyst do not progress to anything. And this is, again, another point why this testing was so important, and knowing that this patient has VHL. If we knew for VHL and you see some changes, maybe that's slightly less concerning. Without diagnosis of VHL, same cyst, I see these changes, we obviously worried about something more sinister happening, and
right,
definitely exactly requires repeat biopsy.
Yeah. And that's something I did learn from this. And they said, you know, one of the physicians said they've seen hundreds of VHL patients and they've never seen any of them develop adenocarcinoma from any of the cysts ever in his entire career. So I guess that's reassuring in my end. So so we decided, okay, we don't need to repeat anything. We'll just watch and see what happens.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for walking us with the current patient situation as well, Dr. Zhao. Yep. What is one key point, Dr. Thosani, that clinicians should remember when they're evaluating pancreatic cysts, especially in complex patients?
Yeah, I think first of all, pancreatic cysts, when we are evaluating, it always starts with the patient's life expectancy. Frequently, I see old age patients going for multi-dollar workup, and at the end, they don't want to do anything. So first and most important thing is, what is patient's life expectancy? And if it's more than 4 or 5 years, then definitely this patient needs to undergo evaluation based on international consensus criteria. We have very good criteria that which patient you go for EUS guided biopsy, which patient you are going to survey. And I think those criteria in general are proven to be right and fairly accurate. But if you are taking this patient for EUS guided fine needle aspiration and cyst fluid analysis, then main key area is differentiation between mucinous and non-mucinous. And current tests are good, maybe suggesting that, but they are not the best. They are not 100% accurate. So if you have access to additional diagnostic testing like next generation sequencing, it can certainly help. And not just it helps you differentiation of mucin versus non-mucin. It can, as Dr. Zha told us, that it can also give you prediction for high-grade dysplasia, possibility of transformation to cancer. So if you start to see TP53 mutation, SMAD4 mutation, mTOR mutation within the cyst, then those would be a little bit more concerning. And then that then opens up a new Pandora's box of what we're going to do. Previously, pancreatic cystic lesion, you only had two options, surveillance versus surgery. And surgery sometimes definitely had its own risk related to pancreas surgery. Now, role of pancreatic cyst chemoablation is slowly but surely getting more established. It's fairly easy to do. It's a very straightforward protocol and algorithm, and the results are really good. And likely in few years, we will be able to prove that by doing that, we are changing the natural history of disease. Right now, we haven't proven it, but we can tell you radiologically, cyst starts to get better after pancreatic cyst chemoablation. And radiofrequency ablation is another modality of ablation. There is very recent paper that also can help. So now we have a lot of minimally invasive endoscopic approach that probably has an impact in this disease, which we can offer to the patient. So I think clinicians who are dealing with this thing should have access to PancreasSeq and able to do the next generation sequencing and maybe start to get this chemoablation, RFA, other newer modality, just to offer to the patient minimally invasive treatment choices.
That's excellent to know. Thank you, both of you. Thank you again to Dr. Zhao and Dr. Thosani for this excellent discussion. The case is a great example of how advances in molecular diagnostics can reveal underlying syndromic disease and ultimately change patient management. I encourage our listeners to read the full case in our February issue of ACG Case Report Journal. And until next time, this is Asta Bharwad, and you have been listening to Behind the Case.